feeding of the 5,000 men. And the idea was that we left you with a question there in Mark chapter 6, starting at about 44. In Mark 6, chapter 44, who's being fed? And what are they being fed? Who is being fed? I thought someone said the apostles. Is it just fish and bread that they're eating? Yeah, they're eating physically, but is that really what is at stake here? Or is it a spiritual application that Jesus is trying to penetrate their hearts, trying to get them to open their minds, trying to get them to rely upon God? So my question for you, if the feeding is a spiritual feast, which it is, what do we see for our lives today? How do you make that application from the apostles that Jesus was trying to reach their hearts, trying to get them to understand the Word of God a little bit better, trying to get them to lay aside some of the things that they previously held on to? What do you think about for yourself today? What's the application for us? Can we hold on to things based upon our past? Can we hold on to things that are physical? Remember what the apostles said when Jesus was talking about feeding these people. Maybe 10, 15,000 people, a lot of folks. What did they say? What was their reaction? Well, cut them loose. It was the physical. It was about just getting the needs taken care of. Is that what Jesus is about? Is he just focused on the physical? Does he understand that they need to eat? Well, sure. That's not, okay, that's not a revelation that at some point they're going to have to eat. Is that the most important thing for Jesus? Well, he's focused on the spiritual, upon the Word of God. Yeah, the application is, why are we here? Are we here to be fed? And Rick's point is that we're here to be fed. We're here to open the Word of God and let it penetrate into our lives. And here you see Jesus taking that opportunity. He had a lot of people in one spot, and it looked like they needed a shepherd, right? They were kind of lost. They're looking for something. They were out there. He wanted to take that opportunity to try to shift their minds, because in large part, what did these crowds see about Jesus? Did they see a physical king here on earth? Yeah, they saw something physical. Well, Jesus is trying to shift that narrative, try to shift that perspective, shift that mindset to something that's more spiritual, permanent, right? So as we begin here in verse 45, Jesus is continuing this idea of spiritual food, spiritual feeding. Verse 45. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he himself was sending the crowd away. And after bidding farewell, he left for the mountain to pray. But what is Jesus tapping into? He's had a situation, you remember that it was kind of a hectic, chaotic. You can imagine that you've got maybe 10, 15,000 people sitting around in groups. It's probably pretty chaotic, right? I mean, there's a lot of activity. There's people collecting, distributing, passing out, and there's just probably a lot of flurry of activity. He's trying to do some teaching. It's probably pretty draining, pretty tiring from a physical perspective. What's his go-to? God. Through prayer. All right, so what's the example for us today? Pray. It's pretty straightforward. Pray. Is it easy to make time to pray? And how often are we to pray? Five times a day? Is it five times a day? Without ceasing, right? So you've got that avenue open constantly, right? It's not something that you're prescribed to do. In other words, everyone's got to pray five times. We're going to gather at 2 p.m. here. You know, no, that's not what we're saying. It's an attitude of prayer. It's a constant communication to God. Here, Jesus is taking that opportunity once again, be by himself, focus, concentrate, renew his mind. Leroy?
Daniel had a schedule. He prayed three
times a day. Yeah. So Daniel had a schedule. That's okay for Daniel, right? So the idea here is for us, we're to pray without ceasing, but it's to pray. I can tell you from my own experience, you ever have a day that's really busy? Maybe every day is like that for you. Leroy says, especially for you, Leroy, since you're retired. The idea is that taking time to pray, it's important. I know for me, sometimes the day gets pretty hectic, and you don't always think, it's not always top of mind, but it should always be top of mind, where you can take that moment to just have a brief communication with God. That's a pretty important thing. And the reason being, we're trying to strengthen our relationship, we're trying to draw near, we're trying to renew our minds, we're trying not to get caught up in the thinking of the world. There's a lot of reasons that you can have for prayer. But here we see Jesus is going to pray. Verse 47. When it was evening, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Seeing them straining at the oars, for the wind was against them. At about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea, and he intended to pass them by. Here are these men in this boat, and they're on the oars, and they're rowing, and they're not making much progress. You ever been in a boat that's not making much progress? I was in a canoe one time, when Ethan was back in Scouts. I was in a canoe one time on a lake, and we were fooling around. The troop had canoes out. We were doing some things. And the wind came up, and I was in this canoe by myself, and I could no more steer that thing than the man in the moon. I mean, it was like, woo, I was just pitched around like crazy. Well, here, a little unsettling, right? I mean, because the wind was blowing in a direction I didn't want to go. So I was fighting against the wind. Here, it's the same thing. Is this just about a physical wind? What is this about? You're getting ahead of me, Jerry. But you're right. He is walking on the water. Is Jesus aware of their situation? He says he can see them, right? This is a physical example, but does it have a spiritual application? What about us today? When we get into the boat and begin to row and the wind comes against us and it gets difficult, is Jesus aware? Do we see him walking on water in our lives coming towards us? Well, not literally, perhaps, but spiritually, is he there? Is he coming to our aid? I mean, look at the example here that these men are sitting, they're rowing in the boat, they're not making any progress. I venture to say there was probably somebody hollering, "Row harder, row faster." You ever have that happen in your life? I've got to row harder. I've got to row faster. I've got to do it. Were these people making real progress? No, it says they weren't. So here, what is the answer to their situation? Well, in verse 49, verse 48, he came to them walking on the sea, and he intended to pass them by. He's just walking across. Well, that's pretty interesting. He has no trouble walking through the storm. He has no trouble with the seas. He has no trouble whatsoever. He's just walking along and he sees them and he's aware. He's got the situation under control, doesn't he? Well, let's see what else. Verse 49, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed that it was a ghost and cried out. For they all saw him and were terrified, but immediately he spoke to them and said to them, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. Take courage, it's I. And they saw some things they couldn't think, they didn't think they'd explain one thing or another. So, but here, what is Jesus' message to these people? Have faith. Take courage. Whenever you have trials and storms of life, can it be something that causes you to be afraid? Well, I could be, I'm not going to be successful. I don't know how this situation is going to turn out, whether it's a health situation or whatever the case is, right? Whatever it is, whatever the storm of life, family, work, whatever it is, there's a storm. And you're not going to, and you don't know the outcome. And you're rowing as hard as you possibly can, and there's Jesus. Leroy?
He didn't say who he was. They knew he was.
They recognized him, didn't they? Eventually.
I wouldn't know
he was. You hadn't spent any time with him physically, right? But you know it now from a spiritual perspective. Because what do we draw from God? What do we draw from Jesus? Peace, right? Yeah, so Rick's point is that this is a test, or this is a situation that Jesus is trying to understand how much faith they have, and maybe help them understand how much faith they have, more importantly. Gina?
But he responded immediately, too. He didn't let them know.
Nope.
He was terrified, but he immediately said, take courage.
That's right. So for us today, the lesson for them, like it is for us today, is about faith. Can you come, when you come to Jesus, is he going to respond? Well, sure he is. He's going to respond immediately, man.
What I thought, it says he didn't pass them by. So if you choose not to turn to God, you choose to not obey him, then you trouble and fight on your own, he'll allow you to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. He was going to allow them to just keep doing what they were doing. Same thing for us today. We can continue to row. We can continue to struggle. It's about shifting your focus from the physical to the spiritual. Richard? Yeah, they saw something out. What is this out there? Walking along the... That's it's beyond our capabilities, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is another instance. Go ahead. Just to see where they were. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so your point is when they threw, when that idea, this unknown was thrown into the mix, they were perceiving something out there that they couldn't explain. It was walking, and it was walking, and it was moving, and it was making progress. Oh, well, we're not. What is that? You know, sort of throwing this idea, this unknown. Once again, it's this idea of situations where we can't control necessarily, and where we get in beyond what we're capable of doing. And yet, we keep rowing, we keep struggling. But here, they saw that unknown situation, and then what was their reaction? They cried out. And then what was his reaction? Take courage. Take courage. It's I. I'm responding. You're crying out, and I'm responding. Verse 51. Then he got into the boat with them, and the wind stopped, and they were utterly astonished. For they had not gained any insight from the incident of the loaves, but their heart was hardened. What is it when you're astonished? When you're astonished by something, what happens? Is it unexpected? I just can't explain what happened. It's unexpected. Unbelievable. All these types of situations. They were utterly astonished. And at this point, they and you can read other accounts of this, and excuse me, you can see what, there's more that transpired here. But for the most part, by the time Jesus gets to the boat, they know it's him, clearly. And so there's a recognition there that he's helping him, he's in the situation. But when he gets into the boat there and the wind stops, they were utterly astonished. What had just happened just a little while ago? Yeah. Reliance upon me. Here's a man, even if you forget the spiritual application of the lesson that he's trying to get across, what happened in a physical sense here? Hey, again, how many loaves did he start with? And how many fish? Two. And he fed how many people? Thousands, right? 5, 10, 15,000. So the idea here is there any rational way that this could have happened? No, not really. So this idea here is they've just witnessed a great miracle. And oh, by the way, where had they been before this? Had they been sent out? They were sent out, right? They were sent out with how much? Nothing. What were they supposed to do when they were there? They were taking a message of God, but what were they doing? Were they healing? Were they casting out demons? They've been using the power of God to help spread the word. So here, they're utterly astonished. Did they give it no thought that Jesus could calm the elements? And he'd done it before. But no thought. Well, what does verse 52 say? Hardened hearts. So what happens to us if our heart becomes hardened? And you could think of it as closed if you want. Faith is what you're pointing to. It's about faith. Even back in this day, there was faith involved. Yeah. Reliance on faith. Richard? Yeah, Richard's point is they just keep putting limits. They're closed off. Whatever it is, I mean, you know, they've kind of closed themselves off. And, oh, I'm sorry, Matt.
Another thought, I think a parallel in today's society, oftentimes God delivers us from our trials. Maybe the next trial forget what He
yeah.
delivered us to.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt's point is that maybe we sort of act the same way, and that we come through a trial, we get delivered, and then, poof, we're right back in the same boat that we were in before. Are we going to gain much from God if we're closed off, if we're hardened? How do we keep from getting hardened? Let's turn over to Romans chapter 12. You all could probably recite this, but I just want to call your attention to it. I thought about this as I was preparing this lesson. It just kind of jumped out at me again. The Apostle Paul writes this to the people there at Rome. He says in verse 1 of chapter 12, "Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship." Okay, so first and foremost, in this particular verse, what is being asked of the people here at Rome? What is he urging them to do? Okay, offer, right? I'm going to offer myself to do a particular work of service. I'm going to offer myself as what? A living, meaning that we're tapped into the Word of God. Holy, well, that's another tapping into the Word of God. And then sacrifice, meaning that we are going to, a holy sacrifice, meaning that we are going to give something of ourselves. So what is it to sacrifice? Could be what? What are some examples of a sacrifice for us today? Give us something of your means. Yeah, what else? There's probably lots of things you all could come up with. That's a great point. Give up your time. Going to visit with someone, take someone somewhere, take someone something. It's sort of a give of your time. Do you expect to get something in return with a sacrifice? No. Wouldn't be a sacrifice. Angie's exactly right. Wouldn't be a sacrifice. We all know people that out in the world, you ever, you're familiar with the quid pro quo type situations. You know, I have friends, relatives, whatever. If they do something for you, what do they expect? Yeah, something in return. So that's not what this is. We're here as a sacrifice. We're giving of our something with no expectation for a monetary or a physical return is there. Verse 2. I shouldn't jump over this. I'm sorry. This is, in the latter part of this, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. So where should the focus, what is the result of this living and holy sacrifice? It's acceptable to God? The goal is to be acceptable to God, right? So things we want to do, we want to be acceptable to God. So then the last aspect there is this a, what sort of a service is this? It's a spiritual service. Spiritual service of worship. Lynn? Yeah. Something, Lynn's point is in the under the law of Moses that the sacrifices that they gave to God for various things had to be the best, the first, whatever it was. So it's the same thing for us today, right? We're not to just kind of give over our leftover whatever. It's about our best. We're gonna make time. We're gonna do things I'm going to give up something, and I'm going to make time to do something that is of service to God. And here's this idea of worship. You know, not in the sense of a gathered worship, but do we think of our lives as worship to God? Yeah, Rick says we should. So it kind of changes your perspective here that Paul is trying to get at about being acceptable to God and what that really constitutes, Matt. As a result of everything that happened. Yep. Because we didn't deserve the situation that we're in, right? So, in Matt's point here in chapter 11 is that this is as a result of what God's done for us. We didn't earn it, and so God gave it to us. And in chapter 11, outlines those ideas in verse 2. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. So if you want to accomplish what's in verse 1, where do you start? Start with yourself, and how do you do that? What is it when you conform to something? Imitate, form with. So you're taking on the traits of the world around you, right? But he says, and do not be conformed, but be what?
Transformed.
A change, a flip. Something that's like a metamorphosis. Something where the caterpillar changes into the butterfly. Now, can the caterpillar, or can the butterfly, should it go back? No, it can't go back, right? It doesn't go back. So this idea here is that this transformation is something that is real, it's permanent, it's different. It's not got one toe back over here in your former self, but it's a transformation. And then by what? Renewing. The renewing of your mind. So how do we renew our minds? Word of God. Glenn? Yeah. Yep, it is a really. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's the idea here in as I think about this. It goes along with the lines that are being said. I think Matt said prayer. Glenn is talking about that God is the kind of the force that's helping, you know, navigate that change. And this idea of renewing your mind. We've got prayer. We have study. And there's one other critical element that's out there. Because we know that Satan knows the Word of God, does he not? And he uses it for his own purposes. So what do we have to do as God's people? There's all these things up here we talked about, the living and holy sacrifice. This definitely talks about action. If we're not being, oh, Peggy? All right, Peggy says, study the word so we can compete. When you compete, what do? You participate. You don't compete by sitting on the sidelines. You're competing in this race. You are exercising, you're building faith. You are being a living and acceptable sacrifice. If we're not exercising, if we're not building, if we're not competing in this race, can we be an acceptable sacrifice? And I realize that we all have there may be some physical limitations, that's not what I'm saying. But whatever capacity we are able, we need to be competing. We need to be racing, as the Hebrew writer talks about. So it's this idea that we are moving forward. We're taking the things of God, the renewing of our mind. We're putting that into practice. We're not conforming to the world around us. Is it easy to conform to things? Well, it can be, right? I mean, it doesn't take much effort to do that, to conform. It's natural. I can just kind of go along with whatever the, you know, latest thing is. But God says, no, you need to be worried about and be concerned with transforming. Look at everything that's been done for you, keeping in mind where you've come from. And he says here that I urge you, brethren, as a result of what was been done before, you ought to have some zeal, you ought to have some gumption to get up and do those things. Okay, so let's go back to Mark. Any more comments before we move along? Yes, so from the perspective of those around you, it can be it can be very difficult. Yeah. Yeah, it's a journey, and it's a race. Yeah, good point. Anything else? We're gonna not really shift gears, but we're just gonna go to the next phase of this. Starting there in verse 53, they come into the boat, and this idea here of hardened hearts and closed off hearts and things like that is kind of where he leaves verse 52. In verse 53 of Mark chapter 6, when they crossed over, they came to the land at Gennesaret and moored to the shore. Now, Gennesaret, if you're looking at it's on the western side of the Sea of Galilee over there. When they got out of the boat, immediately the people recognized him and ran about that whole country and began to carry here and there on their pallets those who were sick to the place where the place they heard he was. The reaction of the people, he lands on the side of the sea. What's immediately their reaction? Here we come. Yeah, it's like they're following. The word is spreading. Jesus is here, and they heard he was down here at Gennesaret. Okay, here we go. And what are they bringing? Bringing the sick. Yeah, it shows you how quickly word can spread, right? Even without a telephone. I remember days gone by of the old calling networks, right? I mean, you know, the old party line and so forth. Word can spread, right? It doesn't need Facebook to spread. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. Is Facebook still a thing? I guess so. Instagram, whatever it is. So this idea here is that he's impacting people around. He's got quite a reputation. You can see we had the thousands over there where he fed them. So there's word is definitely, he's not lacking, is it? People are coming. They're bringing their sick, and they're bringing people there to be healed. They recognize Jesus as a source. It's a source of healing. There's some power here, and they are, at least they recognize that. Some for a source of believing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt there were some that were believing. But for the most part, the masses really saw it as a way to get their sick healed. And in verse 56, when he entered villages or cities or countryside, they were laying sick in the marketplaces and imploring him that they could just touch the fringe of his cloak, and as many as he touched were being cured. Did they have to get a full measure? They just wanted to touch his garment. Just want to touch him as he walks by. Or maybe he'll brush up again. I get my loved one close enough. Maybe he'll just brush up against him. And some of them were seeing that was enough. So there. With the hemorrhage, yeah. Yeah, and she just reached out and touched the fringe of his garment. So here's this idea that these people, they do recognize Jesus as a source. Some may be believing. He definitely has a message that he is preaching. Some, but many are bringing folks there to be healed. That's been their point. Okay, so we got chapter 7. And we'll start this and pick up here and we won't probably get too far. Yeah.
There was some love there.
Oh, they definitely had that, didn't they? Yeah.
I got to work in the field today. I can't carry you to see something.
And did these people have faith that Jesus could help them? Well, absolutely they did. But maybe it was just for the being healed, right? I mean, he had power, so they did reach out. So he is proving that those that reach out on the basis of faith, he does respond. And Leroy's point was their families or whoever was bringing them, they were demonstrating love for their families. Okay, chapter 7, verse 1. Good comments. Chapter 7, verse 1. The Pharisees and some of the scribes gathered around him when they had come from Jerusalem and had seen that some of the disciples were eating their bread with impure hands, that is, unwashed. So the scribes and Pharisees, they came from Jerusalem. And what was their observation about Jesus and his disciples? Yeah, some of the disciples were eating without washing their hands. Anyway, kind of this cleansing, this ceremonial washing that had become a tradition in such a way that it was a tradition there of the elders. Verse 3. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they carefully wash their hands, thus observing the traditions of the elders. And when they came from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they cleanse themselves, and there were many other things which they received in order to observe, such as the washing of cups and pitchers and pots. So this had become quite the ceremony or quite the situation with the scribes and Pharisees and some of the other Jews. They were making it very clear they were coming from the marketplace and they're going to wash and they're going to do all these things, very much making it clear that they were being religious. Let's see how religious that I am. Is it dangerous when people do public things to display their religion. Can it be dangerous? Because why? Linda says you're doing it to be seen. And that's exactly right. You're doing this to become a spectacle, to show your religion, to show you, I'm going to show you how religious I am by how many times I wash my hands or wash the pots and all this other things. So here you've got this idea that these scribes and Pharisees, it was super important for them to do that. Glenn? Yeah, we're going to see that here in just a... Right. Yeah, you've put this, and if you look at the context, it was developed by the elders, and it was something that was sort of made a part of that. Well, I didn't get as far as I wanted to. You guys had great, great comments. I don't know, there's just a lot of stuff in here. So next week, we're going to pick up with chapter 7. So thank you. I appreciate your participation.